Hello, good afternoon, evening, or during the day, whenever you have managed to find us and have the ability to listen in. This is Giant Fork and Spoon Podcast. There's also a blog that has by the same name on blogger.com. Currently, today, we have one of my favorite alumni from the CCAP program, Mr. Christopher, chef over at Whole Foods. Hey, Chris, give our listening audience a little preview into who you are.
Well, like Elena said, my name is Chris, and I am a pastry supervisor at Whole Foods Market here in Chicago. I am at the Streeterville store where I decorate all types of wonderful cakes and make really delicious tarts and other pastries. Pretty much enjoy doing my job. Absolutely love it. Fairly easy, but can be a little demanding, but it's great work. I think we have a pretty decent I think we got pretty decent pastries and cakes and whatnot, so it's worth it.
Awesome. When you were in high school and involved with CCAP, how was that and how important was it to your current state of a career?
Well, I didn't get involved with CCAP until my senior year of high school, actually.
Okay.
So, of course, I was one of those kids who got into the program pretty late. But it was still a super awesome experience. I went through the whole competition process and did all the practices, learned a few different cooking techniques that I had never heard of in a day in my life. It was just super fun. When competition came around, it was very intense. I enjoyed it a lot. I can say that I still have that competition funk inside of me where I'm just ready for whatever contest or anything I can get my hands into. Of course, I did that. That was 2006, actually.
Okay.
I won a $40,000 scholarship to Johnson & Wales University. I attended the Denver campus.
Nice.
And baking and pastry. Unfortunately, I didn't finish my program there, but I did return home back to Chicago, and I attended the Illinois Institute of Art, where I completed my program and received my degree in the baking and pastry art.
Very cool, very cool. Prior to being involved with CCAP in your senior year, was any inclination in your mind that you were going into food?
No. Culinary was actually always a second choice for me in high school because the high school I attended was Richards Career Academy, and we started our career major our sophomore year. And I actually wanted to go into computer info technology, which is what my dad does. He's an IT administrator. And I pretty much well-rounded myself in that area before culinary when I was a kid, so I knew how to build computers and work a little bit with different programs and whatnot, and it just became just second nature to me to want to do. Now when the time was coming for us to pick our career classes for sophomore year, the computer classes were actually full, and culinary was my second choice.
Okay.
In the long run, though, I have always catered with my mom since I was, like, 9 and 10. So I still enjoyed it. It just wasn't something that I didn't think that I would actually do for a career. But I went through my last 3 years at Richards and in the culinary arts program, and it was great. I did some stuff with ProStart. I did a number of job readiness training programs. I got a job, my first restaurant job. I was a busboy at a restaurant called Cafe Luciano's on Rush Street. So it was pretty long time ago.
Right, super busy at Rush Street.
Yeah, yeah. And it was very fun. Again, I enjoyed the culinary arts program a lot. I had two amazing chefs, Mark Solsis and Katie Walsh.
Okay.
They taught me a great deal of a number of things involving food.
Great. And, you know, that kind of reminds me of my own story. Like, my mother was a computer programmer, and I've been playing with computers for as long as I can remember. Way back where you had to, like, even load the punch cards in, that was your program. Mm-hmm. I used to go to school with her and do these kinds of things to help her out. And so that kind of exposure and working with computers, I think it was almost a given that she especially thought I was going into computers, and I didn't have the opportunity to be a part of CCAP that wasn't even on the horizon for anybody at that point in this city, as far as I know.
Right.
And it wasn't until we had, you know, a bunch of college recruiters come around and things like that, and I was like, oh, yeah, I could get a degree in culinary. It was, like, completely not on my horizon. I found out.
Exactly.
It was just like, oh, my God, why didn't I think of that before, you know? So when I announced that that's what I wanted to do, it caused a ripple. Like, what do you mean you're going to do something other than computers? So I totally get your path. It was just not.
Well, for my dad, it really wasn't about what do you mean you're not going to do computers. It was kind of like I was always the kid who just wanted to try to expose myself to as many different things as much as possible.
Okay.
And it just happened to be that, you know, computers and culinary was going to be the thing. And then, of course, being a pastry chef, I actually couldn't get into that until college. So it was just more like, it wasn't, my parents didn't, like, really want me to be, career-wise, be anything specific. Like, they always played around saying that I could be the next president, or doctor or a lawyer, you know, those kinds of things, which are awesome. You know, I would have loved to become a doctor, but at the time, I just don't think that, even as a kid, my heart wasn't fully into wanting that as a career. So culinary just seemed to fit for me.
Okay. Cool. Very cool. Unfortunately, we had to go to tape today because the website, the blogger site, I'm getting tongue-tied, there was a problem with the site. So this is a taped conversation that I will upload after it's done. Because normally about this time, I'm, you know, asking people to call in. Fortunately, we can't do that today, but that's all right. We will be fine and wonderful.
Okay.
Once again, my blogs blogger is Giant Fork and Spoon, and this is his companion podcast on Blog Talk Radio. So if you like what you're hearing, want to hear more, please hit the follow button and not miss anything that we got going on our little menu of today. Okay, so 2 years ago, I met you at the biggest fundraiser that CCAP has every year, which is the International Housewares Convention. And
yep.
We did all these, you know, wonderful things for the visitors that were there. We have our students come, and they cook live, and we dealt with a lot of the pastries and stuff. And it's a really fun kind of fundraiser and a really important to CCAP as a whole. And every year, mm-hmm. Chef Chris and his mom come out and donate their time in order to support the program, which is phenomenal. And I happen to love these two people, really, really cool, because from moment the first conversation we'd ever have, it was always love and was always family. Like, come on, let's go do this. It was so much fun.
Exactly. It was very, very fun. I enjoy just doing anything with CCAP because it's definitely family oriented, and we get to meet new people, and everyone's always excited to open up and just be comfortable with each other and hang out and do more for CCAP, and just make it an all great experience for the students, actually. I feel like it's more of a great experience for us than it is for the students, but it's always good to see or hear how they appreciate what we do for them.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Teaching, even in the best of environments, I think a lot that I know of and know about, I've learned how to reevaluate their importance to my career and to myself when I deal with my students, and I can see that reflected in their face, and they bring conversations and questions you know, from way off left field and getting to know them. Actually, I think I get more out of it than they do sometimes.
Exactly. We definitely do. Again, like I said, I feel like it's definitely a better experience. Oh, give me a second. Hold on.
No problem.
Again, it's definitely a better experience for us than it is for the kids. But like I said, as long as we know that they appreciate what we do for them, that makes it even more enjoyable.
Absolutely. Are you teaching a class this summer?
Yes, I am. Unfortunately, I have not decided what the class will be this year just yet. So I still have some time to play around with the lesson plan.
Yeah.
But for the past 4 years, along with one of my favorite cake decorators, Allison Hickson. She's an awesome and phenomenal pastry chef. I have worked with her and done numerous events with her on many occasions, and her work is just absolutely amazing. So she and I have been doing baking and pastry camps at Robert Morris College for the past 4 years. 1 year we just did basic cake decorating, so I taught them some basic baking techniques on how to bake a cake, how to make buttercream, how to set up a cake. Then we did royal icing runout designs. That was pretty fun. The kids had a great time doing flowers with that and making all these pretty colors. The next year after that, we did just a basic, like, what some culinary universities will consider, like, baking 101 class. So it's just a bunch of quick breads and cookies and just small pastries like that. Then the next year after that, which is actually one of my favorite classes that we did, because I haven't tapped into the world of artisan breads for over 8 years before that class, and it was absolutely phenomenal. I am not a bread baker at all. And like I said, since college, I haven't tapped into that world for quite some time. But with a really great lesson plan and some really great support and guidance from my culinary chef, Jeannie Krause, who still teaches at the Art Institute, she gave me a really great idea. She helped me set up my lesson plan, and it was absolutely phenomenal. The kids did croissants. They did danishes, they did baguettes, they did eppies, we made pizza dough, we did challah bread, brioche. That was, like, again, one of my favorite classes that we did. Everything was executed in that particular camp very, very well. And then finally last year, we did a chocolate and confection class. So the kids
Very cool.
Yes, they did modeling chocolate, which is practically Tootsie Roll, in my opinion, but We made modeling chocolate baskets, and they did a number of different candies, from truffles and brittles and toffee and gummies and lollipops and tons of full sweet candy ideas, and they really, really, really enjoyed it.
That sounds so cool. I've noticed it's been a while since I did bread on a daily basis, but when I do jump back in it, I kind of feel like I don't have my hand quite where it needs to be. Yeah, I got to almost relearn. Bread is kind of demanding.
It is extremely demanding and very, very, very labor intensive. At my job, the store that I work at, we're a full production store, so we do a lot of in-house bread production. So they're doing all their breads from scratch. And I see these people just work and work and work, and I'm like, at some point, we have carpal tunnel, but then it's like that back and arm strength is, that's definitely a workout for you.
Oh, yeah, indeed. Well, you know, I'm a little short thing, and since you know me, I've been carrying more weight than I normally do. But at the same time, like every now and then in my class, I'll need to get everybody's attention really quickly, and sometimes my voice isn't enough. So, if I bang on a table, then I get all the guys be like, oh, my God, Chef, why are you so strong?
Wow.
You know, it's like, that's not supposed to be the case. And they're like, well, you know, I've had arms of a pastry chef.
But it happens.
Yeah. So I find it really, really funny sometimes. My kids are hilarious. With the some of the students that you've been, you know, hands-on with, what do you would say is the average skill level when you get to work with them?
They're pretty much all beginners coming into it. I do happen to learn that some kids have, they definitely have a lot of interest in it. So most of them try it.
Uh-oh, did we lose you? Uh-oh. If you can hear me, Chris, go ahead and,
I can.
There you are. Okay, good.
I hear you. Yeah.
No problem. I was going to say, okay. Hang up and call back in, but that's cool. We got you back.
Okay.
So the last thing I heard was they're kind of newbies.
Yes, they are. They are very new to it, and you can obviously tell they're a lot of beginners. However, they make the effort to want to learn and know the, and know how to do it. So some of them come out doing. So some of them come out doing really, really great work. Again, the most difficult class that I felt that these kids did was the bread class, and all of them achieved it at such a skill level that a lot of people in pastry school starting out in that, they will definitely go above and beyond them if they continue to do it.
Yeah.
Last year I had one student who had an absolute knack for tempering chocolate. Again, he had never done it before that.
Yeah.
And as soon as we would come into the class, I would go, hey, Chris, go ahead and temper a bowl of chocolate. At some point, he did get tired of me saying that, but at the same time, he did it so well. And yeah, I mean, and tempering chocolate, as you know, as a pastry chef, can be very, very difficult. You have so many things going against you, like the heat and humidity, and we're on the 8th floor of the Robert Morris building in the middle of July. So, of course, the weather is just absolutely terrible at that point.
Yeah.
But he did a phenomenal job, and his tempering was very, very, very good.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I'm kind of out of practice when it comes to that. It's been a while. But right now,
if you get out of practice, you happen to just, once you start doing it, like if you haven't done it for a very long time and you start getting back into it, once you know those temperatures, it's like second nature to you, because right now, even now as I temper chocolate, I have the kids use thermometers. But for me, even now, I can just go ahead and just temper chocolate without using a thermometer, knowing what the temperature of the chocolate is, and then it'll just be perfectly fine.
Yeah, it's like a natural kind of timing thing where you can look right at it and tell what temperature it's at and get it going. And I've got one or two students that almost have that. So those are the ones I'm like, you're definitely a baker versus, you know, a savory chef. There's a couple I've identified that I could really dig into more, and I love my pastry work. All right, so let me ask you this. I ask every chef and just about every foodie that I have on the show, I ask them one common question, and that is, what is your earliest food memory?
Oh, that's a tough question to always remember something like that. I guess just as a kid, just being in the kitchen with my mom, I guess. I mean, just knowing exactly how to cook and know what to cook and just learning how to cook, period, I guess.
Were you more often in the kitchen during, like, say, the holiday season?
No, I was always in the kitchen with my mom. Again, she catered for over 25 years, so there was never a moment I was not in the kitchen with her cooking, because that's what that's what she did.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Let's see. In the news the last couple of days, there was an article that came out where Dole Foods has been cited for a listeria bacteria issue in some of their salad, prepacked salads, and the Department of Justice is questioning whether or not they're going to bring formal charges because three or four people have died because of contamination. What do you say or think it should be in cases like this? Should it be the company's closed? Should it be that everybody's indicted? How do you feel about that?
Well, to be completely honest with you, this is my first time ever hearing this news. So to hear something like that, and I guess working for the company, we can be held responsible for that because it is our product. It sucks to hear this news. Again, like I said, with me knowing this information for the first time, I wouldn't even know how to react to that.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty sad that it's food. It's something that touches everybody. And
exactly.
For that not to be very, very high, you're not going to see that on such and such news broadcast at 10 o'clock. I think actually you should, more so than you're currently getting it. And it's like, why don't I have this information? They did a major recall.
And the interesting thing about that is, as you say that, a lot of people, and I'm not being biased or attacking the company that I work for, but a lot of people try and get us for things that are totally irrelevant, but it's also relevant at the same time, because when we had that whole lawsuit about weights and measures and overcharging people, that's their biggest story, is people being overpriced.
Right.
But then you get a story like a listeria outbreak, and it's just so minuscule that it's nothing to everybody. But when it comes to their money, then it's a big issue. So it's and I get that. I totally understand it. But we're talking about something that can kill people instead of you spending that extra few dollars for mislabeling or anything like that. Like I said, I understand. I get it. But then I also feel that there are bigger problems in that spectrum.
Yeah, truly.
That people should look into instead of the things that are small.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like, the media picks what they consider a high priority, and sometimes things like this don't make the list. I mean, you got a half an hour news broadcast. Where is it coming from? Okay, so the other thing that I read in the news was a couple weeks ago was there is a company that is under investigation for putting or using wood shavings as Parmesan cheese.
And I heard about that.
Now, I've read the article from multiple different places about this subject and come to find out that there's only one indictment, and it's not on the company, it's on a member of the board or what have you, and there's only one count of food contamination. Personally, I think it should be, and it's a misdemeanor that they're under. First of all, this shouldn't be a misdemeanor. This should be a higher priority. And second of all, why is there only one charge? Because for me, you did this day in and day out for several years, and you tried to cover it up. So why isn't it every single count of every day that you did this, why aren't they separate charges? Or why isn't the whole board up on investigation or the company itself?
That goes back to what we just said about the media picks and choose what they want to. Because if any case, if there was one account, there were many.
Right. And why isn't it, account for every person that purchased your product at any given time? You're contaminating their food, but it's all wrapped up in the one charge. That doesn't make sense to me.
Not at all. Because, like we said, if it's been one, it has been many. and maybe we should expose all of them.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a little funky when it comes to food. Like I don't particularly get the mindset often of a lot of the consumers, which is, you know, everybody's a consumer, but there's this big segment that either care nothing about what they're eating or they're like super overly picky and doesn't seem to be.
You know what? With you saying that, I never thought about it that way, but I kind of feel like it's people not really caring what they eat, because I mean you're still going to mess up your food some kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
Something with food, something is always going to go wrong, and this can also be on the aspect of you cooking at home. Something could go wrong with your food.
Sure.
I mean, there is always a risk no matter what when it comes to food, whether you are going grocery shopping for it or you are going to a restaurant to eat out.
Mm-hmm.
It's that battle that you got to fight with sometimes. I mean, that's a really tough situation, trying to think whether if it's people not caring about what they eat or people are being too picky. Some people can definitely be picky in their own right. But I would have to say that it would just be people not caring what they eat, because there's so many dietary substitutions for absolutely everything.
Yeah.
So for those picky eaters, there is something for them. So again, it has to be people not caring what they eat.
Yeah, the American diet is not the best. We all know that our obesity rates and disease rates are you know much higher than they need to be. It's almost like, how can I put this? It's almost like either, you know, you got that battle between fast food tastes good versus is it good for you? And I'm constantly talking to my students about that, and I'll say something like, you know, Flamin' Hot Cheetos aren't what you should be eating for breakfast, and their response will be, but it's good. I'm like, no, let's say what it is, it's good tasting. If you like that, that's fine, but don't tell me it's good. It is not good food.
It's not good food, and it's definitely not good for breakfast.
Right.
I would have it as a snack. But, again, it's like, why would I eat a bag of Flamin' Hot Cheetos for breakfast, you know? I know for a fact that as a kid, even me in high school, I have done that before. But now it's like, no, I'm getting older. I should not be eating a bag of Flamin' Hot with cheese at 7 o'clock in the morning before I go to school or before I go to work.
Right.
I mean.
Right. And it's hard for teenagers to envision that. You know, I tell them all the time, eventually you'll be as old as me, and you're going to go, chef, actually crazy chef that I had blah, blah, blah years ago, she was right, because now I have hypertension. Now I have, you know, high cholesterol, and I should have listened.
Yeah, exactly. I have experienced a biometric screening recently, and I was my cholesterol was too high. I know why. And I have definitely been making the effort to change that. Have I completely 100% changed my entire diet? Of course not. I still eat everything under the sun. That does not mean I don't care about what I eat. It's about what I eat and when I eat it. And again, that's the thing. Like I said, I wouldn't eat a bag of Flamin' Hot Cheetos at 7 o'clock in the morning. I would have that as a snack. I'll definitely go for that apple and oatmeal at 7 o'clock in the morning and maybe a cup of coffee. That's my downfall. Coffee is my biggest downfall. But I have been changing it up to whereas I only have, like, agave nectar and almond milk instead of using heavy cream and actual sugar.
Mm.
So there are certain things that you can change about your diet and the way you eat. And like I said, it's what you eat when you eat it.
Yeah, yeah. Since you work for Whole Foods, you are in a position to tell us a little bit about that company. There are things that they do that are great and things that are kind of questionable. For me now, under construction by your company at 63rd and Halsted, in the heart of West Inglewood, they're building a Whole Foods market. Some have talked about this as a great thing to have a better list of choices for a spot in Chicago that's considered a food desert, and I would agree on that. However, I'm not really sure about the success that they're going to have in that area. A lot of those people over there are receiving government food subsidy. Are they going to be able to afford to buy mahi mahi at Old Food, or are they going to go around the corner to a Save-A-Lot or an Aldi and do what they can with that money there?
Well, for one, I don't believe that particular store will be selling mahi mahi. With that being said, I'll give a prime example. The Midtown store in Detroit had just opened over, I think it's been 2 years now for that particular store.
Right.
And in a way, people call that the prototype store for lower income communities.
Okay.
And right now, they are doing extremely, extremely well. And we're talking about Detroit.
Right.
When you think about that, you're like, Detroit, Chicago. Okay. I mean,
there's some major similarities.
There are major similarities, but it's at the same time, it's like a Whole Foods in Detroit compared to a Whole Foods on the south side of Chicago. When you think of the south side of Chicago, that could be absolutely anywhere. Again, we are opening up a store in Hyde Park. That's a pretty affluent area on the south
right.
side. And then, again, when we have the Inglewood store, I'm going to say, in my honest opinion, with it being a food desert, it's going to be successful. They will have product in the store that will be affordable for people to purchase. Like I said, they won't have mahi-mahi. I don't think a lot of people will be interested in it, but if they are, they can go to another store to purchase that.
Okay.
Whole Foods do accept Illinois Link. So
yeah,
they can use that to make those kinds of purchases. It also depends on your diet, nonetheless. I mean, if you're someone who specifically has to have something that's organic, we will provide that. We have tons of items that are nut-free, gluten-free, more vegan options than you can imagine at any other store. So, again, it really depends on the person's dietary needs and their need for food, because with it being a convenient and super close to so many homes in that area, I mean, where would you want to shop? I mean, they have the option to whether travel out of their neighborhood to go grocery shopping or travel within, because that particular store is there. The only
right.
grocery store over in that neighborhood right now is the Aldi. And I don't think there's any other grocery store too super close to that area outside
sure.
of that.
Yeah.
It
has been that side of town, that neighborhood, has been struggling for a good long while in this
mm-hmm.
city. And kind of almost like governmentally like abandoned, because, you know, you don't see Streets and Sand filling potholes too much over there. You don't see abandoned buildings that, you know, are either demolished or repurposed or even, you know, taken care of. Some of them are empty and not boarded up. So you end up with all kinds of different scenarios that are connected to poverty
mm-hmm.
in that region. And I have relatives that don't live too far from there, and I really do like the idea of them having better options, because truth be told, a food desert, really honestly, a lot of people have heard it as a buzzword or so, but may not completely understand the concept. You know, if I'm
right.
60 years old and I live in a neighborhood and I have to travel by public transportation more than a mile, you know, more than 2 miles to get something as simple as a fresh carrot, there's a problem. A lot of those people are eating out of the spoon, or they're going to the liquor store that has some grocery, you know, items on sale or whatever there, but that's not real food and it's extremely limited. So I appreciate the effort, but I don't know how, you know, how well the neighborhood's going to adopt it.
Well, here's one thing that Whole Foods has been doing. They've been having these, like, town hall meetings for the past several months just to get familiar with the people in the community, not only getting familiar with them, but offering them, but letting them know that there is, that there are job opportunities for them there.
Right.
When
right.
when you offer people in the community to something brand new that's coming into their community, when you offer them a job opportunity, it's like, okay, this is going to work out for us. Like I said, with them having all these town hall meetings and orientations to get people more familiar with the company and our culture, mm-hmm. it will get people more interested in wanting to come and shop there.
Fantastic. I love it. And I look forward to, you know, really seeing how it'll pan out in the next couple of years. So I think
I will be at that store opening when they do open. I will be working there for probably a week or so just to help them get everything going.
Okay.
So I'm pretty excited about that.
Cool. Keep me up to date. I would love to come out there and check it out during the time that you're there. I would love it. You have always been, you know, warm and open and the kind of chef that I try to be, as opposed to some people's understanding of a chef being more like, a television celebrity who's yelling at people. So I'm really looking at and paying attention to your career, see where it all goes. Fantastic. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us today. I'm really excited about some of the things that we've discussed. And much love to you and your mom. I would love to have her on as well. Let her know that, you know, she is more than welcome, you know, in the upcoming weeks to come in and tell us about her food history. It's a great thing that we met, and I want to foster that.
Say that one time.
I think it's a great thing that we met, and I really would like to keep fostering our relationship and make sure that, you know, I like to follow around, see what's going on.
Of course. I'm definitely open to talking and doing things as such.
Awesome. Thanks so much. We'll talk to each other in the next couple of weeks and see how things are going. Thanks for listening.
Of course.
To Giant Fork and Spoon. This is your chef Elena, the crazy girl on the south side of Chicago trying to make a difference in people's food lives. Thanks so much. Talk to you guys later.
Thank you. Bye.